Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
What's up, hustlers? Welcome back. This is Andrew Morgans, founder of Marknology, here as today's host of Startup Hustle. Today, we're going to be talking about the future of e-commerce search, and I've got one of the top startups out of Seattle. And before I make that introduction, today's episode of Startup Hustle is powered by Fullscale.io. Hiring software developers is difficult. Fullscale can help you build a software team quickly and affordably, and has a platform to help you manage that team. Visit Fullscale.io to learn more. Justin Lee out of Seattle, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Andrew. First time, long time listener, first time guest. So it's a real pleasure to be here.
Well, awesome. Glad to have you on. I didn't know you were a listener before the show. I wouldn't have taken as much time telling you about the format, but I'm excited. Shared a little bit of my story with Justin before the show, and we just have so much in common. Definitely around a passion and a hate for Amazon, probably. But we're going to get into kind of that and what we do. And a lot of times it's solving those pain points for everybody else is really, what we do. So we'll get into the show talking about Workflow Labs. I definitely want to save some time on the show to be able to get into what exactly you guys are doing to help sellers and or help agencies and people on the platform. But I'd like to get started just knowing a little bit more about you, Justin. Obviously, being there in Seattle, you're exposed to Amazon even potentially before a lot of other people in regards to just like this monstrous beast that was coming up and just hearing about it. But where did your entrepreneurial journey start even before Amazon? Did you have startups before this one? Did you know you wanted to be in business right out of school? Like, where's your journey begin?
Sure. Yeah, I actually remember the exact moment I decided I was going to start a company. So, to go way back, ways to date myself here, coming out of business school, it was back in 2005. And we were back, my wife and I went to business school back east. And so our folks were going to investment banking companies and other things over there. And we were like, hey, we're going to go to Amazon. And they're like, the bookstore? Like, why would you do that? Like, that seems like a weird thing to go do. It's 2005. Remember, this is a pretty small company at that time. But we did. And it was a pretty cool place to be. Very data driven, very much come up with an idea, execute your idea, test it, grow, learn. Super empowering. So, a great testing ground for someone who wants to start a company later. Like, you get to make decisions and validate your decisions. But I remember I was in this meeting one time, and they said, they have this saying for folks that work at Amazon. It was, what would WWJD, what would Jeff do? And I was like, he would leave. He would start a company. He would not be in this meeting. So for like what it was supposed to be, like think like an owner and think like a what can drive Amazon forward, like he would start a company. And I was like, oh, the stock price is $32. This company's going nowhere. I'm gonna start my own company. And so I left and started an agency called IdealClick at that point to help brands win on Amazon.
That actually sounds a little bit familiar to me. I need to hear more about IdealClick. For some reason, that name, and I don't say that like that name, just kind of sounds familiar to me. So talk to me a little bit about what that first idea was like. And did your wife leave with you? or leave you?
No, thank God. Not yet. Not yet. Well, thankfully, no. Thankfully, she stayed there for another 10 years because the stock price obviously grew from $32. So at the time, not a great financial decision to leave Amazon. Luckily, she stayed there 10 years. So that worked out okay. So I started IdealClick. IdealClick was a managed services agency, very similar to what we're talking about here. And we managed the Amazon business for about 400 brands, had 150 employees, and we were just, it was the right time, right place, helping brands understand what is an ASIN, how do you create a catalog, how do you grow a business, while Amazon was adding categories. And it was a pretty wild ride. Pretty cool. Did that for 14 years.
So from 2000, give me a timeline here, just a little bit of like what those years were like.
Yeah. So I left Amazon and started that in 2008. So from 2008 until last year, I was driving, had started IdealClick and was driving IdealClick. And it was great. It's awesome. You know, a people managed services business, we were just chatting about this, is great. You're about as good as your last business review that you did with the client. And so I said, what would be really great is if we had some technology that removes the mundanity from the people's lives that are in managed services or on the client side trying to deal with all of these daily tasks of Amazon. So that's why we focused on how do we take all of those things that people know how to do, update an ASIN, unsuppress an ASIN, handle a third-party variant that's problematic, and in courts. How do you take all of those things, programatize that knowledge, and then apply that knowledge through software so that you get a truly scalable way to manage your business with Amazon? So that's
okay. I love it. Sorry, that can't be the end, because I was like, I want to know about the business, but it also makes sense why your agency is so familiar. Just like, you just exited or were in that until last year. So quite a bit of time. I joined I'm 12 years into Amazon and didn't work there. Didn't work at corporate Amazon. So just have been working in parallel to Amazon, so to speak, but I've seen the whole journey and the evolution of categories being added. And I think I was the first to sell like a Chicago Steak Company. Like I remember that idea and just being like, okay, we're trying to sell this food on dry ice. Like there was no one else doing that. There's nothing to model. Like, we just got really creative with it. It was fun. The new categories coming out were fun. And jumping into them was also like always new. Okay, new opportunity. 150 people. I think we're, my team's around 35. So quite a bit larger operation, 400 brands. Like I can just imagine, what that was like up until last year. And I see you smiling. So I think like you probably got out of the agency and it's been a good thing. But talking about that journey, those 14 years, like, right. And what you guys are solving for now. Talk to me just a little bit about that journey being in Seattle. For me, on the services side, it felt very much like I was a trailblazer, like a machete out in front, clearing the way. Like there was no one really talking about agencies helping brands on Amazon, people being into paying for that service. There was no demand for it necessarily, at least outside of Seattle where I am. There was not people like banging on my door to be like, let's help on Amazon. Things like Amazon SEO weren't things. No one was writing about that, talking about those. Holistic e-commerce, attribution, all of these things have come about. But I feel like you've been there before me in regards to timeline for this. Like, what was it like in the early days? Just some insight for me with this idea that you had whenever you left Amazon and started your own company. What were those first, few months, years like really getting brands, building an agency, getting people around you that believed in what you're doing?
And by the way, I take no credit for any of this. All of the success that we had at IdealClick was driven by the people that joined and were much smarter and better than me at all of the things that we did. But you asked about the early years. The early years were just what I can only describe as perhaps a shit ton of bad ideas. So like they all kind of seemed like good ideas at the time. Like we did these brand stores and Facebook stores. You'd have to really kind of dig through the internet to find those things. But taking these shoppable experiences and leveraging Amazon as a backend to fulfill orders and all of that. And it was great. It gave you a ton of learnings. Once you start interacting with Amazon and watching what happens to their data and then doing some correlation between that data and sales, you start to really understand the machine of how Amazon converts traffic to sales and sales to profit. And so, you know, we just got to do everything wrong for 4 or 5 years. And through that process of doing things wrong, we learned what right things there were. And then I added some folks to the team that just had tremendous amount of knowledge, both about brands and about product categories and about the managed services business in general. When that all came together, it was, you know, just the perfect time as Amazon was adding categories to put all of that knowledge to use. And it was a kick. You know, you mentioned some of the products that you guys have focused on and won on. And it was awesome. You're like, all right, here's a mattress company. How are we going to sell mattresses online? We can figure it out. If it can be done, we can do it.
It's so common now, right? It's common now.
Like, it's still not easy, but common.
Just like, you know, I opened up a pillow, I think, the other day, and it was just like this big and just, you know. but I remember the first time thinking about, like, you're going to order a mattress online? Like, you know, probably like our grandparents, when they're thinking about just like, oh, you're buying something online. Like, for me, it's like, about to buy a mattress online? How does that work? Like, is it going to be small? Is it a kid's mattress? Like, you know, fun stuff.
Yeah, I had this guy who'd been the category lead for tools and houseware, and he'd kind of done a tour through kind of that area of Amazon. And he would always say, Bill, he was an amazing guy, and he would always say, wow, if that looks hard, you should try shipping a toilet. We're like, okay, it can't be as hard as shipping it. These things, they're huge, they're heavy, they're fragile. So nothing is as hard as shipping a toilet. And he's like, we sold lots of toilets, so we can sell that too. I'm like, great. We'll figure that out.
I love that. I need him on my team. That sounds like...
Yeah. I'll connect you.
Yeah. No, but I think I had, you know, 10,000 conversations of talking to brands or sellers of like trying to tell them about the opportunity and just not really having all of the case studies or all of the, you know, the traditional marketing materials to be able to really convince people of something, you know. But I remember the first time selling men's formal suspenders on Amazon. That was a fun one. I probably talked to him for 6 months. You know, $99, $120 a pair. Not the hot topic like JCPenney suspenders, but like some nice, formal, thick, you know. And as someone in the Midwest, we don't have that many like men's fashion boutique, like, you know, stores. You're going to go to like the mall. You're going to have some stores on the plaza here in Kansas City, Express or something like that. There's just not really a lot of options. So like, but it doesn't mean people aren't in suits. It doesn't mean people don't want these things. You know, we're just not in LA. We can just pop in somewhere and get like just exactly what you want, a niche, you know? So for me, it was always made tons of sense to buy stuff online. You know, for someone else that might be in a more populated area, they're like, I don't know if people are going to spend $120 on Amazon. All I see on there, $9.99 or $19.99 Hot Topic men's suspenders, you know? And proving that use case was a lot of fun. We did several hundred thousand the first year, which for him that didn't think the idea would take off at all, it was like that was success for us. But those types, now there's so many products on Amazon, it's harder to find something that's not there, you know, entirely. I can remember in the early days when categories were opening, clothing is still behind, apparel is still behind, in my opinion. But tools and hardware, if anyone's listening, great category to be in. I think it's a great category to be in. No, but fun. And I think like one thing that's interesting from your perspective is just like having worked at the parent company yourself and working with people that come from there. What was it like kind of doing your own thing and still having your wife work there?
That's an interesting question. You probably have to ask my kids. It's funny. Like, when my kids were littler, they were in my office and they were like playing in this white room. And it's like on this whiteboard in one of the conference rooms. And I like kind of popped in, was listening to them. And they're like, okay, we're going to have a meeting and we're going to talk about how we're going to sell more toys on the Toys R Us website. And they're like, you know, like 4 and 6, you know, at the time. I'm like, oh, maybe my kids have been over e-commerced. So I guess maybe to answer your question, it's probably not that healthy. Like, it's just a little too much e-commerce. I like e-commerce. It's great. But, you know, my kids should focus on saving the world or curing cancer, not necessarily selling more toys on a toy platform.
What I will say is that being good at sales can help you in any role.
Fair,
right?
Fair point.
So even if they're like saving dinosaurs, future dinosaurs that haven't been made, you know, being good at selling whatever you're doing will be good. So,
and it's true. And the nice thing about e-commerce is it's math. Like, you're doing, it's about logistics and thought processes and like, and doing the math around how it's actually going to work. And you know, it's not just convincing someone to put it on a truck and put it on a shelf. Like, you have to work through the whole process if you want it to be successful. I remember one of the brands we were talking to at one point said, "Hey, why aren't I winning on Amazon?" And we were like, "Because you're bottled water." And they were like, "But I'm the number three brand, or maybe two brand in bottled water. Like, we should be a top water on Amazon. Like, you cost more than 15 cents an ounce to ship. Your ASV, your average sales price, you know, is kind of like $10 or $15. It could be $100. You're still going to be losing money. You got to do the math." So we were just
about plastic bottles empty and tell them to fill them up at home.
Totally. This is dehydrated water. So all you have to do is add your own. Although we did sell a lot of water bottles, and that's a great business as well on Amazon.
I think a lot of private label businesses like did very well with those tumblers and, water bottle type of products. The gym, the fitness area for sure was like one that was like pioneering Amazon private label brands. And we were talking earlier about a large water brand that we're working with. So, things have changed. And I think that the Amazon customer as well has changed a little bit in regards to understanding that they can be paying more on Amazon to get something for convenience instead of just those like low bottom prices that, you know, people are chasing. Okay, let's change gears just a little bit. And before I do, shout out to our sponsor, Fullscale.io. Finding expert software developers doesn't have to be difficult, especially when you visit Fullscale.io, where you can build a software team quickly and affordably. Use the Fullscale platform to define your technical needs and then see what available testers, developers, and leaders are ready to join your team. Visit Fullscale.io to learn more. So 14 years in the agency, exited in 2022. Or just started the new project in
2022. The company was sold to Commerce IQ. I'd left just previously, so I've been doing this for just a little over a year now.
Okay, and so you jumped right back in. By the way, you jumped right back in, and I don't always hear that. You know, I hear a lot about just like kind of trying to figure out what I'm going to do or what the move is. It sounds like maybe like thinking about less of a people or services managed business and more of a SaaS was just like, you know, it's something that crossed my mind as well. Because you're just like, look, I love what I do. I love e-commerce. I love solving problems. But people is a whole nother game. Right, it's a whole nother game to be great at people, managing people, get the right people and the right things, and just a lot more emotional than it is the tech work. But you started Workflow Labs in 2022. What was like? Where did the initial idea, come from? This is it something that you had kind of like been sitting on for a while that you wanted to do and just needed the time, or is it something that you know, when you just started saying, "Hey, what do I want to do next?" Like, you know, this came to life.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those, you kind of hit the nail on the head earlier. The grass is always greener. If you're running a services business, you're always like, wow, it'd be great if this was a product and we could just scale the crap out of it and like add features and just every day be making it better and better and better. Where in a services business, you know, you're kind of really much kind of reinventing the wheel and executing again and again. You don't kind of get that, let's add more features forever kind of thing you get in the product. So I always wanted to do that. And the thing I know well is setting up and managing products on Amazon. And I still think people don't do a very good job of it. It's the fundamental thing you have to do to be successful on Amazon or in the e-commerce platform. It doesn't matter how great your marketing strategy is if your UPC is wrong. It doesn't matter how awesome your off Amazon retail media ad plan powered by AMC is if your title's wrong or you don't have any one of another thousand of different defects in your product that causes friction in the system.
Yeah.
And so we were like, great, I know this really well. I think the world could benefit from having some of the mundanity. We talk about this a lot. It sucks. Every day you have to log in and check on your tickets or check on the site looking for all these problems. It's terrible. People are not meant to spend their day managing a ticket queue. And so we said we can free them from all that with a bit of software, and I think everyone can use it, and I think it'll make it all run faster, and we can take advantage of the future faster if we could have the day-to-day details automated and resolved. And so, you know, we talked, your point of the podcast is the future of search. I think that that's going to be a big deal, and you can't get there if you don't have the fundamentals managed correctly. And so that's what we did here at Workflow Labs. And it, you know, it's great. Like the folks that I'm working with now, or I've been working with for, you know, over 5 years, been doing the same sorts of things. And so it's what we geek out about. We're like, hey, what do you do to unsuppress an ASIN in this category when this particular ANDing core has, you know, been triggered? Well, let's figure it out and then let's put it in software. So it's been a pretty fun process.
I absolutely love that. And I'm honestly, I didn't know of the software before the podcast, and I'm just excited to learn more about it and dig into it even as an agency and see how it can help my team. You know, it's definitely something that as you're building, you know, account managers are getting poached. We're in a tough time right now, even as an agency, just keeping your people, training your people, get them qualified. There's always a bigger brother somewhere that can come and take your role players, you know? So, finding software that can kind of help you assist with that is very, very important to, you know, not just the brand maybe dealing with it, but the agencies that are working with the brands to do it. You know, we're trying to keep top talent, and you're not going to keep top talent if you're making them just button clickers either, you know? So you got to get them working on the things they want to work on, so they feel like they're having fun, you know, in their job. Like I still love e-commerce. I'm years in, if I'm not doing certain things in the business that I don't like, right? E-commerce, I still enjoy it. I love it. I love fixing problems. I love brand building. I love storytelling. I love all the aspects of e-com. But nobody likes fixing variations and template changes. And, you know, it's very just hard to find. But very nuanced. So I think you guys are solving a really big problem and a big pain point for a lot of agencies.
Yeah, I think you kind of nailed it. And I think there's a bigger conversation going on right now. Like, what do humans do? Like, what are humans good at versus machines? And that question, I think, is going to evolve rapidly. But the things that I think humans do really well is they have inspiration and creativity and flexibility, and they have the ability to create things that don't yet exist. Like that's what humans are really good for. What they're terrible at is like doing monotonous tasks incredibly accurately at high rates of speed at every hour of the day. Machines are really great at that.
There's so I want to emotion, be in, I think that get in the way, you know?
Yeah. So I want to be in the space where we're enabling humans and removing those tasks and doing it at an ever increasing rate of speed. So I like e-commerce, and I like our ability to apply that kind of be part of that trend. I think it's pretty cool.
I love it. I couldn't agree more. I think as the CEO of my company and kind of the gatekeeper to sales in regards to like who we onboard or who we take on as clients, it's of the utmost importance for me to keep the team working on projects that inspire them, that they're having fun, they're feeling challenged, and not challenged because they can't get a variation template to upload, you know, challenged to push their skills in brand building and, you know, communication and on all these other human things. Like something that I think most agencies try to scale out of and they try to automate, and, you know, but automating doesn't mean just outsourcing to, you know, the Philippines or India or Pakistan. That's not what automating is in your agency. Like these are still team members doing great work, doing a lot of stuff. Like what is that human element that we do better? I remember this is like, but just talking about like saving time for your team and getting them working on the right things. Like I scaled this brand from, over 7 years from 500,000 to 17 million. We were in 11 international marketplaces on Amazon. One of the first like brands to really be crushing internationally. They had like 5 SKUs. So it was a little bit easier. Awesome. And we had a lot of PPC spend going to just those 5. It taught me a lot about not really needing SKU count or ASIN count or diversifying your PPC across all the products. Like what if you took all of that and just boom, hammered 2 or 3 ASINs and just was the best? And what was the potential? Now it's just a lot different than the other brands that have 1,000 ASINs that are pushing me to do half, you know, lackluster work in order to get everything done. You know, it was like, well, what if we just like obsessed about 3, you know? And it was kind of fun for me. But I remember when I first started engaging with them, they had a lady in their business, an older lady, that was legitimately replying to every customer with an Amazon message, like, thank you, like, da, 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 like kind of a copy and paste. But they were, you know, if they were 1895 and we were doing 17 million or even a million, think about how many transactions were happening, right? And I think at the time it might have been like Feedback Whiz or, you know, Feedback Genius or something at the time. But I remember having the convo and really understanding what they were just telling me about this lady, you know, because I didn't expect that was what was happening. They're telling me that they have this lady that sends out messages. And I just kind of like took this pause and I was just like, well, for $19.95 a month, I can just get a message, custom message sent to all these customers and she can do something else. And I had to say it delicately because it wasn't like they were stupid for doing that. They just like, right. Didn't know, right. They just didn't know what was available out there. They knew that it was important to reach out to customers. And it was also one of those moments where I'm like, I'm not trying to take people's jobs. Like no part of what I do has ever been about like getting rid of this sales guy or this distributor or this or that. It's always been about just like, how can we make the business run better and like just find something else? You know, there's something better that we can be doing than a lot of these tasks if they can be done by automation or a robot or technology. So funny little story there, but I just remember like it was that awkwardness, like where everyone's on the Zoom call and you're just like, I'm sure they're paying her more than $19.95 a month, right? You know, so there's like obviously a lot of savings. And then they, you know, they obviously found something else for her to do at the company.
Yeah.
But just those funny moments where like, you know, you said you're trying to build a business where, you know, you're able to give some of that back to employees or brand builders. And I couldn't agree more. You know, there's certain things
we should be doing. We run into that with our clients, you know, we work with agencies is how we go to market. And we run into that sometimes. They're like, well, we have a really, really great catalog team. And I'm like, I know you do. And those people should be interfacing with their clients. You have a tremendous amount of knowledge in those people. And it's sort of wasted having them do the same repetitive tasks all the time. So have them spend less time checking on their Amazon cases and have them spend more time talking to the client, helping the client understand how should I be thinking about my product so that I have less issues.
Or writing content or jumping on podcasts or
doing
all types of things with their knowledge, right? Like, I mean, I do a lot of it, but if my team members weren't doing other things, they have plenty to say, like, you know, and I would love all of them to be doing content if possible. Like, you know, hey, I'm the catalog guy, Martinology or whatever. And this is what I do on a daily basis and, you know, share tips and give value. And there's so many things that team members could be doing if they weren't doing some of those things. So tell me how it works a little bit. Let's take a little bit of time in case we've got some agency owners on here. I think we've got a little time. I'm an agency. I've got 40, 50 brands or so. We onboard with you guys. How do, you know, if you have all these separate accounts and things like that, how do you plug in? What does plugging in look like in regards to getting help in those things?
Yeah. So the way kind of our system's designed to work is we have a platform, you know, it's a website, it's a portal. It also is supported by APIs and webhooks. So in some cases we're interacting with technology providers and they're saying, like they syndicate content, but they can't syndicate variations or something like that. So those variation requests would come to us by API, gets registered by our system. They give us the information along with that request that they need. And then our software grabs it and then starts handling whatever's required in order to handle it. So in some cases, our system will log into Amazon and cut a case to Amazon. Or our system will log into Amazon and navigate through the UI and put the information where it needs to be, validate it, make sure we get a success message, or we'll hit Amazon's API. Whatever a person would do in order to resolve whatever issue came in is what our system does. So some folks come, technology providers come through the API. Our managed service partners, we have a portal so they can log in, see all of their clients, create an issue. For any of their clients, they can expose that UI. So it's organizational aware. So if one of your clients logged in, they would just see, here's all the issues that that Marknology is working on for us and the current status and when I expect them to be all done. So providing total transparency to all of those and all of those issues going on with Amazon, making it easy to ask for new stuff. And we also do a lot of audits. So it's constantly looking at the account and looking for triggers that we think will cause future problems.
That's incredible. Okay.
A great example is like that over the last 14 years, we've learned what words that are in your content are likely to cause a suppressed ASIN. So we're constantly looking through all of your products and saying, hey, this particular word is sometimes problematic. You might want to change it because if you don't, you might get suppressed in the future. So it's making recommendations like that. I think you know, as we look at it, the most important thing is that you don't have to stay up to date on what all the best practices for Amazon are. You can put whatever request you want in the system and we'll do it. And then we have a team behind the scenes that our automation runs, but it doesn't always work. You know, sometimes Amazon's changed something, or sometimes this is a process that you're asking that we haven't automated yet.
Right. It's a first time fix.
First time fix. Totally. Then our team does it. We record what we do. We push that to our product team and then turn that into software going forward.
That's amazing.
And so that's sort of it. You know, I'd like to say it's, you know, AI enabled next gen thinking, but no, it's just executing the fundamentals of what's required to be successful on platforms like Amazon.
And like to anyone listening, it might sound simple, but like actually what they're fixing is something that might a suppressed listing or something like that might be something that takes a team member off of something else that they're doing. It becomes a red alert in a business. It could, you know, it could be their MVP, ASIN. It could be a product that's doing 80% of their revenue, you know, being down 24, 48, 72 hours. It can be, you know, catastrophic for some brands. You know, so it's whether you fix it in that amount of time or not, you still have to jump on it and let the client know that it's getting fixed. It's getting resolved. We're working on it. It's in progress. We're doing what we can to fix it. And then you just, you know, you deal with what you have to deal with. But it's definitely not something that's like, yeah, that's 48 hours in our queue. We'll get to it soon. You know, these types of things are like things that disrupt the rest of what you're working on a lot of times, or can be the difference in being profitable that month or not. You know, a main, maybe they're cruising along and this one is 20% of their you know, their profit or their sales for that month. These, so a suppressed listing, sure, some of them are not hurting the accounts that much. Some of them can be just like, you know, major holes in the ship, so to speak. And so these are like things you got to jump on. And you have to have team members that maybe this is the first time that they've done this one too, and they have to go be able to fix that. You know, that's something we tell clients is like, we don't know everything, but like, you know, we have more experience than most out there, and we will do our best to figure it out. You know, we'll do whatever it takes to figure it out, because that's the only answer you can really give. You haven't seen every problem that can come up on Amazon. They're continuing to change. Sometimes you don't even know what's happening. If you're taking on new accounts with old outstanding issues, there's all types of stuff happening there that you just don't really know until you get in there and get your hands dirty. I mean, I've seen almost every scenario you can think of, you know, in 12 years of doing this, like as far as just like what to expect. And some of them are major, major issues. Like I've gone to arbitration with Amazon over like, you know, store suspensions or ASIN, things like that, that were just like really crippling a business, knowing that we had the right paperwork. We were the real brand, but maybe we were 5 years late to Amazon and things are confused and messed up. And, you know, so just giving a little color to anyone listening in, like what exactly the software does for an agency or a brand, if they go to market through agencies, is this is where you need your expertise in your company. You can say like, you know, a variation fix, like just off the bat, suppressed listings and variations, getting them right or wrong, getting them fixed are like major roadblocks in, you know, account fix ups, cleanups, getting them where you want them to be. Are you dealing with vendor central and seller central? Are you dealing just with seller central only? Like, you know, are you dealing with international ASINs that are causing problems in other international accounts, or, you know, doing one thing right? I think a variation in a EU account can affect the US depending on what you're doing. Like there can be just these weird things that come up that if you like have to have your top lieutenants working on these issues on top of everything else that they're doing, it just is a major, you know, profit suck inside of an agency. So you made it simple. I just wanted to add a little color to like, you know, what that really means on the ground, and that, you know, it's a simple solution, but to a difficult problem or a real problem.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, in the agency days, sometimes, you know, I join a call, listen in, I'm like, oh my gosh, we have a moment. You know, you have a half hour, an hour to talk to a client. We should be talking about product development or marketing strategy or something that's going to help to grow the business. Instead, you spend the first 20 minutes like giving an update on, you know, why that variation has or has not, you know, deployed correctly or deployed and then got broken. Like, this is terrible. So our goal here is, you know, we call it 0 minutes. We want that account manager to have to spend 0 minutes before the call prepping on the issues, in order to be able to speak intelligently to the client about everything going on. And we want them to spend 0 minutes after the call going and doing all the follow-ups around all the stuff. You should just be able to do everything in real time and have it be seamless and easy and spend your time talking to people about stuff that can change the business.
No, I love it. And honestly, the flat files, what you're doing now through API and automation, you know, a lot of times has been taught and spoken about as flat file work. Because a lot of the changes that happen inside of this marketplace that we know as Amazon is flat file work, you know, getting templates to go through, getting content to change, getting brand registry to change, getting some of these item specific things to change. You had to be a wizard, so to speak, at flat files. And they have changed a ton through the years. You know, they continue to evolve and change. And just something that, you know, for the longest time, I avoided all automation software, these like feed file softwares or things like that, because they were doing 70% quality of what the listing should be on Amazon. And I just had a problem swallowing that, you know, so it became cool. This software does this, this software does this. You can push all of these brands' products to Amazon, but 70% is that something that we're happy with? No, we're not, because we're trying to be the best, you know. And so that meant manual work and having to explain to people why, sure, you could pay this for this software, but you're going to have 70%. Well, that extra 30% or 20, even 10%, that extra 10% of data makes a difference on these marketplaces, getting the data right, getting it accurate, whether that's return rates, whether that's like, you know, Amazon's internal checkboxes of what makes a good listing, whether that's, you know, maximizing your SEO or getting the right keywords in there or whatever the case might be. I don't need a bunch of blanketed tags from a Shopify website coming in through a feed file and being my backend search terms on Amazon. You know, this was the difference in the early days. Everyone wanted to do it the easy way.
Totally. But some of those errors, difference. And some of that, like 30%, those errors are permanent. Those are forever. Like, you mess up an ASIN and seller essentially, you're never, or a UPC, you're never going to get that back. So you have to be, the level of accuracy and detail is crazy high, just to not mess up your business.
Yeah, hey, no, and people don't know that, you know. And so a lot of times at the beginning, what we really got is, I feel like people now know how difficult Amazon can be, and so they're more. What's the word I'm looking for? More apt to like work with an agency to get it right than they used to be in the past, where they're like, this got to be easy. Let's try this little software. It says I can automate everything from eBay to my Amazon listings. And all these brands were just pushing product into the catalog that was like with lackluster information. And it's been years of cleanup by agencies like ours, honestly, getting not just to come in and market and do a great job, but to clean up. You know, that 30% that was maybe wrong, or as much as you can, you know, trying to get that to that 100% how the listing should be.
Totally. Yeah. And they pay for it in chargebacks and everything along the way. Hey, I have a question for you on product search.
Okay.
So I am, you obviously know the space incredibly well. You've brought a lot of brands to market. You've grown a lot of big businesses. The thing that I keep thinking about is in using the chat AI tools is that is fundamentally different than keyword search. And so Amazon, you know, kind of really brought keyword matching shopping to the forefront in 1995 with this grid, get thousands and thousands of products that did a character match against the keyword that I used. But the cool thing now is with natural language processing and iterative search, I don't have to match the keyword anymore. Like, the concept of baby dog and puppy are really the same things, and natural language can understand that. And the fact that I can now give context around what I'm asking for. Instead of just walking into Home Depot and yelling, doorknob, you can be like, hey, I need a doorknob on my patio. And they're like, all right, you need one with a lock and that goes on outside. So those two things, I think, will fundamentally change not just how customers shop on Amazon, but who's winning on Amazon. Because all the folks that built their business by winning one or two keywords at really high velocity, you know, that might just all go away. So just kind of curious to know if you're thinking about that, or, you know, if it's something you guys are
talking about. We're definitely implementing AI into our business ASAP. And I want brands to know that we're doing it early instead of being 2, 3, 4 years down the road and being like, oh yeah, by the way, our writers use AI or this or that, right? And so we're working hand in hand with softwares now, like Jasper AI and different ones you might have heard of, to implement like our 10 years of methodology around writing good listings and content, and actual, like, so there's this flow of like writing great sales copy, which is more of what you're talking about of like, I'm looking for a doorknob or a door, you know, I'm looking to replace something on my door, is more of like sales copy. It's flowy. It's like, you know, in context versus like, you know, and on Google for so many years, the search was, what are the best doorknobs in Home Depot, or what are the best doorknobs at an affordable price? And you're going to get a list of 10 of the best top 10 doorknobs. You're going to click through and maybe it takes you to a website or something like that. You ask questions. And Amazon is direct response, right? So it became this, if I type in doorknobs, knobs for doors, door handles, handles for doors, home doors, closet doors, like what are all the things that like people might be searching around this product I'm selling? And I'm going to take the top 10 based on maybe a 5-5-5 rule or something like that, where it's like small, medium, large search volume. I'm not going to be able to take the top spot. So I'm going to start with small, medium and work my way up. You know, that kind of thinking. And then like, once you're up and you've got a product moving, maybe it's now time to change and go after those top five that you weren't at the beginning. And so you're making all these changes all the time, right? Instead of really just selling, like, I've got this amazing brass doorknob that like, I think is a great price and, gets made right here in the US and, you know, we'll have it to you tomorrow if you want it. And I've got a deal if you buy three. Like, instead of salesmanship and like doing it, it's like really changed. And so I say all that to say there was a difference in Google. There was like this, if I just keyword stuff on Amazon, that doesn't get the job done either. People learn pretty quickly. Like that was like, you know, we felt like that was Chinese list sellers. Like that was all just coming straight from China, keyword stuffing based on research and having VAs somewhere just like keyword stuff these instead of understanding how to sell to Americans. Americans like to be emotionally sold to, like sweet talkers. We've been watching Hollywood since we were kids. You know, we want to be sold to. And I think that comes through in common language. What will be interesting is, you know, I believe that with video right now on Amazon, with video, with image, alt tags, image descriptions, image titles, the images, like let's say it's a blue baby wraparound towel, right? And if you have a blue baby wraparound towel in the image, and that's what they're searching, you stand a better search relevance. Okay. So it's right. Like Amazon now has a scanning software that is scanning images for like what you're selling to see if it's in those images. You can be more relevant. And that's a little secret tip for anyone listening. But I think that now that I know that it's at that sophistication, I mean, I think it's honest. And so, you know, I've been, if you have images like the captions, they might call it like for the hearing impaired. Right. But what we know is it's also just preparing us for voice search and Alexa and Amazon's choice. And no one is voice searching like doorknob handle wooden. Right. Like no one is voice searching. Totally. So to me, if you understand like how big they've been pushing voice search and like, you know, getting captions and videos and these types of things like that, it makes complete sense to me that that's right around the corner, if not here already, what you're saying, which is being able to say, Alexa, what's the best podcast mic, or Alexa, I want a podcast kit for beginners. And it pairing like, you know, reviews along like, you know, comments in the reviews along with the video, along with the text, and really just trying to give you the best product. Because I believe that Amazon is and always will be built for the end consumer. And so if they lead with that, then it's not about us figuring out how to hack and sell products and rank for them and whatever. It's more so about adjusting to what's best for the customer instead of being like, I don't want to change. I don't want to change. I don't want to change. Like, this is how we've always done it. It's how we've always done it. You'll be left behind. But if you're like, no, actually selling the product around context of what they're actually looking for and then showing them the right product and it being what they're looking for, not because I tricked them by ranking for this keyword to show it to them, but this actually being what they want, I think that's the best.
Totally. Result. So it's kind of like, in some ways it's nicely freeing from this system that was never like the way customers shopped or the way brands were used to building brand equity and talking to consumers. So that's kind of freeing and nice. I think the part that will, that ratchets up is, it's just a lot more to do. Like they're going to have to be super fast at understanding what the changes are on the platform and what are your new options. what are your new ways to create content and talk to customers, and how do you deploy it, you know, faster, more accurately, all the time, and get better at telling the story. So, you know,
that's what I'm focused on. So I'm excited about it. If I'm being honest, like, my attitude toward it is difficulty breeds opportunity. And so I'm always looking for opportunities, and where stuff gets hard, I lean into that. Maybe almost to a fault, but, like, you know, taking on the Amazon problem was a hard problem. Like, you know, I personally am a 25-30,000 hours working on Amazon. You know, my sisters that have worked with me, join me year three or four, they've got 20,000 hours. Like, combined, we're 60,000 hours or so on solving this problem. Like, it's an obsession in some ways. You know, you just learn as you go, you have fun with it. But I've been pushing the content, storytelling, emotional connection through Amazon, what people see as just this white pages with white background images and, like, no brand. I've been pushing, what are all the ways we can just push that to the limits with emotional content, through images, through A+ pages, by making the modules flow into each other. And, you know, so pushing those things. So for me, I love getting away a little bit from the gamification of things, in regards to just, like, okay, if I do PPC on this keyword and then I switch it here, let's just sell the best products, you know, with the best stories, the best content, the best reviews, the best experience. And the nuance is supposed to be the technical. It shouldn't drive everything else.
Right. You know? And it definitely was in the driver's seat for a long time. I did traffic analysis at Amazon back when I was there. And I can tell you, at least in the consumables categories of Amazon, like, it didn't matter what was below the fold. Like, the things that drove sales in terms of conversion were, you know, is it in stock? Is it going to ship in 2 days? Prime eligible, you could just say that and capture those two concepts, and that'll drop your conversion rate from 18% down to about 4%. And then the title and the image, the price. After that, like, the differences in conversion were kind of insignificant. But now, like, I think this will be an opportunity for us to kind of be a true for Amazon to be a true utility to the shopper and help them find better products.
Well, I think Amazon's adjusting. I've just seen them go through iterations, and they found kind of, like, what there's always going to be people that are always trying to shortcut. Right. And so Amazon, I went to school for networking and security and computer science. I got a computer science degree. So my background is kind of, like, finding hackers, right, and securing stuff. And so, like, you know, even if I did black hat at the beginning, figuring stuff out, learning Amazon, we're definitely white hat now, and realized early on, like, that is not the way to go to build brands. And to look for, like, long game brand building, what's existed since the beginning of time. Well, long brand building, think of the customer first. It's not about the seller first. Just selling online was new and novice. So, you know, I think the first marketplaces were thinking of the sellers first, like eBay, and how to take pictures easy and things like that. But it's really about the consumers and building trust. And that's what Amazon did for the rest of e-commerce, is built trust. And it was that 2-day shipping. I guess what I'm saying is that I think the customer that is on Amazon is evolving as well as Amazon, where it's not just the people looking for deals or looking to get it super fast or get the cheapest item. Now we have luxury items. We have TikTok content creators where people are just browsing on Amazon instead of direct response, where you're just, like, clicking exactly what you want and buying it because you were reading it out of a blog list. You're now, I'm just perusing the shopping and you know, Amazon fashion and different things like that. And it's just creating a little bit different of the customers that are coming to the platform instead of just those ones that are going to be driven just by those things. I don't know. I'm excited to see the change. I need it to keep evolving, or else everybody else will just keep copying me. So we got to have something to innovate into. No, that's just a joke. But I like the innovation. I like the evolution of it. You know, change is always a little scary, but I think if it's a better, like, if you think about it from, like, that is better. That is better. If it worked in that way, that would be better. And that's why I have a team, so that I don't have to learn all of the changes all of the time, super quick, all by myself. You know, I built a team instead of being a guru on an island somewhere. I was like, I always knew I wanted to be part of a team that was better at other stuff. And I've got a team around me, just like you said. You said your success was built on the team and the people you hired. I feel very much the same. And they're really good at that shit. So, you know, I feel confident.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah. Yeah.
I haven't been asked that question. That's very unique. And I had a lot of fun with that one. Thank you. that's definitely new. It's going to be fun. it's going to be fun to figure it out. So what do you think? What are your thoughts? Just as we round out, like, what are your thoughts, I guess, on the same topic, and solving for that at speed, I guess, in regards to search?
Yeah, I don't know yet. I don't think anyone really knows yet. I was recently reading an article. Amazon's just started hiring for the people that are going to determine how the system works. So it's a little bit too early for us to say, to be prescriptive and say, this is what brands should do. Ultimately, the thing that's obvious they're going to have to do is brands are going to have to learn how the natural language models and how the AI thinks inside every retailer platform. And it'll be different across every retailer platform. And you have to have an understanding of how it works. And then all of those models are going to be based on some sort of data. And that data is going to be constantly learning so that the retailer is up to speed on how customers shop and what's relevant to them. And brands are going to have to figure out, how do I inform those learning models about my products? You know, it's sort of like back in the day, the brand would show up at Walmart with the line and do the line review. And they used to show up at Amazon sometimes too. And we'd put the products on the free shelf because we didn't know what to do with them. But like, you come walk in and explain to the retailer why your products are great. You're not going to be explaining to the retailer. You're going to be explaining to an AI, a data set, a natural language model that says, this is why my product is great. Now you can go talk to people intelligently about my products.
I think they're doing that now with influencer marketing.
Yeah, I think influencer marketing is great. Reviews are another source of it. Product content. These are all pieces of the puzzle, but there'll be more. And as your consumer evolves, you need to figure out, how do I learn from my consumer and get those learnings into my content and into my influencer? You know, how do I make my whole ecosystem around my brand move really fast? Because that's the future, is the speed of relevancy.
I think we've tasted a little bit of this in regards to international expansion and localization in those markets, and been kind of forced to do that. Like selling in Amazon Germany, Amazon Italy, Amazon France, there's localization, and there's localization even within Germany, right? And localization here in the Midwest, like, some people will say soda, some people say Coke, some people will say, can I get a pop, right? Like, those are three different ways, I guess, of referring to the same thing. And it's based on where you are geographically, like how you refer to those things. Like, do you say supper? Do you say dinner? Right? Do you say a meal, based on where you're at in the country? And so I think that localization piece is kind of already at play. And this is just going to be the next step into that. But if I go into, if I have an Amazon.com listing and I go into Google Translate or Amazon's translation services, and then put that into an Amazon Germany listing, I'm still very far from where I need to be. Okay. So totally. I know AI is going to speed a lot of things up, but you know, what I found is, if I went to, there's different partners that do localization and language translation, a couple big ones that do it in the Amazon space. If I go to them and translate my listings into German, or into Dutch, and then, and I do the same thing with my PPC, the conversion rate and the difference in from my images to my SEO copy to my PPC is like night and day. So it's not just like getting the right words or whatever. It's localizing to those areas and how they talk and how they search. It can be the huge difference. So I just see that at scale. You know, it's like, think about the brands that are selling. They're all selling shampoo and body wash, and they used to sell it to women, mainly as a target market. They went through the shopping stores to buy the stuff, whatever. And now we got Manscaped and Ballsy Brand, and we've got all these like male focused body care, body wash type of products. It's just everything. It seems like every man wipes and dude wipes, and everything is just getting super niche. And I think that's kind of the same thing. It's going to just come into the marketplaces, as it's starting with the products. It'll come into the marketplaces so that we're finding them the same way. At least I'm theorizing with you and having fun doing it.
I think, the part that big brands will be scared of is, you used to measure your business by like, let's say my business is up 10% this month or down 10%, you're like, well, did I go out of stock or did I like lose an important placement? Like, now you're not going to have access to that easy information. Because it's not just a keyword, it was, you know, these are generative searches. So you are going to need different and better tools to understand, like, what's driving your business? Am I no longer relevant to a consumer trend that I used to be relevant to? Is someone else no more? What is that trend? It's not a category. You know, it's a local trend in Germany could be swinging your sales, and how do you pull apart and understand that? I think it'll be really interesting to watch. And I think a lot of opportunities for, you know, for companies like yours and others in the space will be created to help brands figure that out.
You got to stay connected to the pulse, and like, you won't, these old brands won't be able to stay like, you know, basically like just winning off of their old reputation or their old momentum. And they'll have to be like, well, if language is changing, we know language changes quickly. Like, we've got new words from rap songs and all types of stuff that happens. And those become common language, you know, as they blend in and our cultures get more and more blended here in the US, at least, over time, you got to stay relevant, you know? So those agencies are going to fill the gap for those brands, I think, by being like young and quick to move and you know, able to adjust. But I think a complicated subject, a beautiful one, but I think the simple version of it to anyone listening is, you have, like, if Amazon's coming out with innovation or new things, you have to jump in. You just have to jump in with both feet and figure it out, and understand what Amazon's trying to do, because that's how you get the best, like, big perspective on what they're trying to do as a whole in the marketplace that is Amazon, is by, I'm going to jump into Amazon Posts and Amazon Live and Amazon Inspire. And maybe we're not doing them at like full tilt, like, you know, but we are in there, we're learning, we're trying to pay attention. Okay, they're getting more into this like social space, this content space, this branding space. Like, we need to be there as well. And I think if you're doing those things, listening to the changes coming out on Amazon, you'll be okay.
I'd agree, but don't jump too hard. Like, I was on the Fresh team where we sold large sponsorships to brands that I'm pretty sure they never made back. You know, I was there for Z Shops and the Amazon phones and like all of their tests, just like they test and learn, you know, brands need to be testing and learning too. And ready to cut the, you know, don't put it all in, test it. If it works, scale it. If it doesn't, dump it, do something else.
Work with an agency that's testing it for you.
Yeah, so, that has, you know, tested, that has experience testing across different brands. They're getting some bigger perspective on what's working, what isn't.
Awesome. I could go back and forth with you all day. I'm having too much fun. But like, as we end up the show, I like to end with two questions. One, what's something you're working on in the business that you're super excited about in 2023? I know you guys are new, so it's probably everything, but like something that, you know, specific you're working on that's fun. And then something you as Justin are working on in 2023 that you're excited about or moving into, something unique for you. And then lastly, where can people find you and get connected?
Sure, absolutely. I wasn't aware there was going to be a test. That wasn't
not a test. It's an open answer. It's an open answer. You could say AI and be good. So,
all right. So something in the business, I'm pretty excited. I mean, so we've, you know, been doing this for about a year, and now we're just hitting our scaling point. So now we are, you know, seeing our number of cases that we're doing every week kind of start to skyrocket. And so all of the assumptions that you made along the way when you're starting a company are going to get tested. And I'm excited to see which ones are wrong.
Yeah.
So like, we're like, yeah, I'm sure that's going to happen. Like, no, it's not going to be that. It's going to be something else. So now over the next couple of few months is what we get to see, what we were right about and wrong about, and start to make some decisions. So I'm pretty excited about that. And I'm excited about the number of hours we'll give back to people through that process, where they can spend with their kids and playing with their dog and hanging out in the sunshine. So I'm excited about those things. Personally, you know, my kids are, I just heard this. I'm getting a little deeper than I thought I'd expect you on this show. I just heard the stat that you spend 93% of the time with your kids before they're 18, that you'll spend in their entire lives. So after they turn 18, you only have 7% left. So I've got kids that are 12 and 14. And so right now I'm excited about going to their plays and playing baseball with my son and having a little bit of a break from the services and businesses take a lot of time. Product businesses do too, but you can schedule a little bit better. So I'm pretty excited to be on a schedule to spend some time with my kids. And wait, what was the third?
And
question?
Then lastly, where can we get in contact with you?
Oh yes, workflowlabs.net, workflowlabs.net as our, and would be happy to talk with you about anything Amazon related or anything else really. It was a really pleasure. It was a pleasure, Andrew. This was great. It's nice to hear from someone else who's gone through a lot of the same kind of challenges and learnings with brands and built successful products like you have.
Likewise, and I'm excited to honestly get to test the software and figure out what this can do for my agency and my team. So we'll definitely have to connect after the show. Shout out again to our sponsor, Fullscale.io. Do you need to hire software engineers, testers, or leaders? Let Fullscale help. They have the people and the platform to help you build and manage a team of experts. At Fullscale, they specialize in building long-term teams that work only for you. Learn more when you visit Fullscale.io. Justin, thank you so much for being on the show, sharing your story and your journey. I had some fun with the questions I'm not used to getting asked either. That was a lot of fun for me. And I'm like, what? How do I think about that? I don't really know. But I have to double down on, you know, just getting time. I don't have kids of my own, but I actually have my parents back in my life, you know, just because of like work, and we're in the same city now and spending a lot more time with them. So trying to reverse some of that data, you know, and switch it up if we can. So I 100% agree there. And thanks again to our hustlers and our listeners for tuning in. Really appreciate your guys' attention. Hopefully you guys learned some stuff from this. And if not, you can always find us in the show notes. I'm going to have Justin's contact information there as well as mine. And we'll see you next time. Thanks, guys.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time.